you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. What you're about to hear is part two of an expansive, multi-part story casting you as the main character. If you haven't heard the first part of The Black Scourge, I highly recommend you go back and check that out first so you're not starting in the middle of a story. Before we begin, I want to thank all our new patrons who signed up recently. Your support is how we make this show possible. And for those of you who haven't signed up yet, there are tons of stories for you to unlock in Patreon, including a very dark Christmas special called Escape from Stalingrad. And I'll play you a sample at the end of the show. A huge shout out to Rob Kane from Ancient Rome Refocused. As we enter our 10th anniversary of the Twilight Histories, I have to thank Rob for giving me the inspiration for this podcast. I recommend you check out Show 2 from Ancient Rome Refocused. It's called Time Travel is Easy, History is Hard. It's one of my all-time favorite shows, and one that gave me the idea for the Twilight Histories. And now, for today's show, The Black Scourge, Part 2.
I count at least 100 ships, Gunnar says, his mouth agape. The beach is crawling with activity as throngs of Aztec warriors pull the large black longboats onto the grassy shore. They're wearing thick, hooded skins to protect against the wind and rain, which is now built into a frenzy. It's a wonder the Aztec fleet was able to make the crossing.
How many warriors can you fit in each ship, you say?
50 to 75, Hadwin says. He looks glum, his electric blue eyes drooping in defeat. You do a quick calculation. That's 5,000 to 7,500 warriors. Moosebell only has 300 people capable of fighting, and only a fraction of those are strong-backed lads. This will be a siege, and a quick one at that. It's over, Gunnar. You're going to have to give them your cursed coca field.
No. What do you mean, no? Look at them. Look how many there are.
This will be over before nightfall.
No, we will fight. Those jungle rats are no match for our Norse spears.
They have Norse spears. Look. And Norse axes and mail.
It is not the weapons that make the warrior, but the man who wields them.
If I can interject, you say, I've seen these Aztecs fight. They don't care for their own lives.
You think us Vikings are less brave?
Gunnar says. He's furious. I didn't say that. Your bravery is famed through the ages, and your strength. What I mean to say is, don't underestimate them. These Aztecs fight like devils.
They are half our size, jungle rats. Our race was created by Odin. There's a reason why they thought Eric was a god. Let's see how they fare against an army of gods.
More like a company, you say. Enough, you two, Hadwin says, pushing you apart. We will give them our crop, and that's final.
You have no honor.
You have no brains.
You'll have no brains,
Gunnar says, and hefts his battle axe. Don't, you say, but it's too late. Gunnar swings his axe at Hadwin. Hadwin just barely manages to leap out of the way before it slams into the wall and is stuck in the moist swamp wood. Hadwin draws his knife.
If I wanted to kill you, you'd be dead, Gunnar says. Now put that sewing pin away.
Let's be clear about who's in charge here. I've given you a lot of leeway, Gunnar. I let you plant your coca field, even though I didn't want you to. I let you trade with Midgard, even though it would rub us against Eric. I've let your insults slip once too many, and it's time to remind you who's in charge. With the ferocity of a lunging wolf, Gunnar charges Hadwin and smacks the knife out of his hand. It clatters on the ground below. Hadwin stands his ground and doesn't flinch, even though he's now defenseless against the massive frame of Gunnar.
Maybe it's time we had a change in leadership.
Hey, Gunnar! Hadwin!
Comes a faint voice, muffled by the wind. You look over the battlement to see a convoy of Aztec warriors trailing a big Viking dressed in exotic colored robes and feathers.
Well, if it isn't Eric the Bastard.
The man continues to walk towards the walls. He waves and smiles, then makes a face as though this whole thing were a joke between friends.
Hey, let me in, he says once within earshot. I've got a few kegs of mead from Isengard. It's made with honey.
Piss off, Eric, Gunnar says.
Hadwin tries to step forward and speak, but Gunnar presses him back.
You came to fight and will fight.
Eric's smile disappears.
I've come to talk.
Talk, talk. You sent Ivar here to talk. He told us you were going to kill us all with your jungle monkey army if we didn't do exactly what you said. Oh, we talked all right. Seems like the tone has changed.
Now, hold on. I shouldn't have sent Ivar like that. He's a bit zealous at times. You know him. He's a bore. So serious. Come on now. Let me in and we'll sit down at your hearth and drink this mead like old friends. There's enough for everyone.
Friends? You think we're friends? You come here and threaten us, and you threaten us with your right hand while trying to clap us on the back with the other.
There's a storm coming. It's hard to speak over the wind. It will be much warmer by your hearth. Just let me in. We can resolve this over a drink. Why don't we try that first before knocking heads?
Open the gates, Hadwin yells.
Is that you, Hadwin? You letting old Gunnar boss you around these days? The big hog in the pen, eh?
What are you doing? Gunnar says, glaring at Hadwin. You're messing up my diplomacy.
You let him in now, Hadwin says.
Gunnar looks around. The Vikings down at the gate are hesitant, not knowing whose orders to follow.
This is a bad idea, Hadwin. Eric's as sly as a she-wolf. Don't trust him.
Would you rather we knock heads with him? You want to fight that?
Hadwin says, pointing out at the vast host of Aztec warriors forming battle lines.
Don't you think we should at least hear him out? This is how diplomacy works, Gunnar.
It's okay. Open the gates, Hadwin calls down. You can come in, Eric, but only you. Tell your jungle creatures to go back to their boats.
Ha ha, that a boy, Hadwin,
Eric says, and leaps forward, a keg over each shoulder.
So, how are you? How's the swamp? Eric says, leaning back in his chair and crossing his feet on the table.
Gunnar and Hadwin are sitting bolt upright, alert and unhappy.
Well, you're a boring bunch today. Go on, have a swig of mead and loosen your jowls. We haven't seen each other in a year. What's exciting?
Cut to the chase, Gunnar says.
First, we catch up.
Have you heard news from home?
Yes, Hadwin says, and looks at you. It's a shame, isn't it?
Old Jormungand died too young.
What? Gunnar says. The king is dead? In the siege?
The siege? Now that I haven't heard. Eric takes his legs off the table and leans in. What do you know?
Go on, tell him,
Atwin says to you. Your body erupts in cold sweat.
I don't have much information. You're looking for soldiers to help lift the siege, Gunnar says. Eric has more than a few to spare. Why don't you donate some of your Aztecs?
Haha, now, I'm not in the business of charity.
Charity? Is stopping the Black Scourge from destroying our home charity?
First things first, I haven't heard of any siege, and there's plenty enough business here to keep us busy.
Ah, here it comes.
I thought you came here to reminisce about home. We have a problem.
And what is our problem?
You know very well what it is. You're growing my plant.
Since when did you own a plant?
It's mine.
The room is tense. There's a power flowing from Eric. It's the kind of power only a man who is used to being a god can wield. He reins it in, smiles, and chuckles a little, leaning back in his chair. You have my plant. I want you to stop growing it. Grow some fruit and sell it to Midgard. But leave the coca plant to me.
You come here and threaten us. You impoverish our people. Then, when we get back on our feet, you come here and try to impoverish us again.
Impoverish? I've offered you the wealth of the world. Here, look. Eric reaches into a pouch and pulls out a solid gold necklace covered in Aztec designs. Gunnar and Hadwin's eyes bulge. You like it? Have it, he says, tosses it on the table with a clatter. I have a great room full of such trinkets. I have enough gold that it would take that entire army out there to carry it. And my Vikings, Eric leans in. I make sure they have gold too. And not just gold. Anything. Anything they want is theirs. All I ask is for their loyalty. Gunnar glances at Hadwin, but the smaller man's face is immovable. What does loyalty mean to you? Hadwin says. Same as before. You pack up your things and come back with me to Technochictitlan. I'll give you each a palace and servants, women too. What do you want in exchange? Protection.
Gunnar bursts out laughing. Protection? Ha, so there it is. You're not so safe among your savages. You masquerade as their god, but let me guess, not everyone believes you.
You displace an entire ruling class and you make some enemies. What I need are allies I can trust. I need good, strong Vikings. Demigods, right? The answer was no before. Hadwin says. And the answer is no, still. We escaped the Black Scourge. We came all the way to live in peace and practice our own customs as free and honest people. We don't want to masquerade as divine beings, always in fear of having our throats cut, even if you offer great wealth.
You may just have your throats cut if you stay here and grow my plants.
I think we're done here. Hadwin says. Come with me, Eric says, and leaps from his chair. He walks out the door of the great hall as if he owns it. You, Gunnar, and Hadwin follow. Even amongst enemies, Eric seems to command obedience. There's a tower next to the great hall, and Eric leads you through the door. You follow him. The various ladders until you reach the top. The wind howls and the tower creaks and bends. You are high over the small town, with its simple reed thatched roofs and palisade walls.
Beyond these, the Aztecs have finished forming into units and are standing at the ready. Beyond them, out to sea, you can make out an ominous, twisting, black storm. The horizon is a wall of wind that whips up waves as though a sea giant were kicking its legs under the ocean. "You see?" Eric says, pointing back towards the jungle.
"My field,"
Gunnar says. He grabs his hair. You follow Eric's fingers to see a black smoke rising from the canopy and curling in the wind. "Now we're done here," Eric says. "The next time I catch you growing my plant." Before Eric can finish his thought, Gunnar grabs him by the throat and smashes him in the face with his fist. Eric steps back, trying to escape the rapid blows. He leans against the rail. It breaks, and he falls. You and Hadwin grab Gunnar before he too goes over the edge. There's a sickening thump. You look down. Eric's body is smashed in the mud. A pool of blood already forms under his skull. You look at the army standing ready on the shore.
"Do you think they saw?" Gunnar says.
"It doesn't matter if they saw. Eric is dead. Oh, this is a disaster," Hadwin says. You can almost feel the army springing towards the walls, scaling it like a mass of insects, fierce and uncaring, an army of death. The sparse Viking warriors who stand sentry along the swamp wood walls will be no match. Once the battle begins, it will be over in a matter of minutes.
"Eric, are you there?"
You're at the wall now, standing on a flimsy battlement. Ivar stands below with a small retinue of Viking warriors, each decorated with elaborate Aztec war paint and feathers mixed with chainmail, iron helmets, and axes.
"Hey, Gunnar, I see you there,"
Ivar says, trying to cast his voice above the wind.
"We saw someone fall from the tower. We want to see Eric. Now!"
"What should I say?" Gunnar says to Hadwin.
"We need to put him off."
"Why?
How?"
"He'll find out soon enough.
The moment they attack, it's over for us, so we need to delay."
"We might as well just fight them now and get it done with."
"No, let me talk to him," Hadwin says, and pushes Gunnar aside. "Hey, Ivar, don't worry. Eric is fine. He's just drunk."
"What? I can't hear you. Send Eric out."
"We will. But he's throwing up. He can't handle his mead."
"What?"
"I said he can't handle his mead."
"I can't hear you. Send Eric out now, or by the gods, I'll blow this conch."
Hadwin turns.
"Where's Gunnar?"
"I don't know," you say, and look around. You didn't see him leave the battlement.
"We'll send him out when he's done puking,"
Hadwin says, resuming his diplomacy.
"Puking? He's sick?"
A great tidal wave crashes on the shore, and the boats bob and crash into each other. A gust of wind pushes the Aztec warriors, and the whole group seems to flap like a sail.
"I said, send Eric out or I'll blow this conch!"
Ivar lifts the shell above his head for emphasis. Just by raising the shell, the Aztec warriors start to rumble and move, beating their shields with their imported Viking weapons. Their captains run up and down their lines, trying to rein them in. You feel your heart thump in your chest. Gunnar climbs the ladder to the battlements. He pushes you and Hadwin aside.
"I'll solve this," he says.
He lifts up Eric's severed head.
"No,"
Hadwin says, but it's too late. Gunnar throws the head as far as he can. It lands halfway between the walls and Ivar.
"By the gods, what have you done?"
and says, "There's no sense talking. It's time to fight. Archers!"
Gunnar lifts his axe, and the Vikings all along the walls raise their bows. Ivar seems to get the message. He stumbles back at first, then he and his retinue turn and run.
"So long, cousin. Shoot the bastards," Gunnar says, and lowers his axe.
The group of fleeing men is pelted by hundreds of arrows that smack their bodies and the ground around them. One sole survivor pushes the bodies off himself and hobbles along.
"Fire!"
Gunnar says, and again a second wave of arrows blasts through the roaring air, this time all directed at the one man. He collapses to the ground without a twitch.
A horn sounds from the throng of Aztecs. It's answered by more horns. The massive warriors cheer and rush forward, slamming their shields with axes and spears like dull, clattering drums. Their voices rise in high-pitched whoops and staccato chirps, like wild birds and animals from the jungle.
"Time to die," Gunnar says, and lowers his helmet.
"I guess it's as good a time as any," Adwin says, and snaps his own helmet down.
The first wave of Aztec warriors rushes into a murder of arrows. The warriors behind them leap over the corpses, their painted faces incensed like jaguars by the blood. They fall into the moat, which is concealed by reeds. Sharpened stakes pierce their bodies. Even so, the Aztecs come on, hordes of them, uncaring for their own losses. Aztec archers fire Viking longbows with accuracy of trained Welshmen. Many of the men and women manning the battlements fall before the survivors learn to crouch behind the softened swamp wood. You can see between the lumber. Ladders are brought forward. A battering ram is on its way up from the ships. The Aztec archers no longer fire in volleys, but hunt like snipers for anyone foolish enough to look over the walls. All the while, the wind howls. It whips and slaps you so hard that you have to hold on to the log floor to prevent yourself from falling. The walls creak and buckle. You feel they may at any instant tumble over, even without the help of the Aztecs. During a pause in the wind, you look again through the crack. The ships are bouncing and crashing into one another. One of them is picked up like a toy and is tossed on its side. The wind is so thick you can almost see it. Aztecs pour over the walls. The fighting is hand to hand and brutal. Hadwin ducks a blow from an axe. Gunnar cleaves the Aztec in two before he can recover. An Aztec warrior lands on the battlements next to you. You try to raise your shield, but a gust of wind picks it up and flings it from side to side. The shield hits the Aztec, then both the shield and the warrior are thrown from the battlement to land on a thatched roof on a nearby home. Another gust smashes the battlements like the backhand slap of some invisible god. A whole section of the wall is cleared. Aztecs leap into the empty space of the battlements, axes and spears at the ready. Below, the front gate is smashed and Aztecs pour in. You hadn't even heard the ramming through the hammer blows of the storm. Hadwin grabs your helmet and yells into your ear, "To the Great Hall!" He does the same to Gunnar and all the other Vikings you pass along the battlements. You follow them down a ladder just as the battlements are overrun. There is heavy fighting in the streets. The Aztecs are pressing in, slaughtering all they see with rapid bloodlust. The Vikings are much larger and stronger. You see one of them hurl two great spears with one throw to press back a wave of Aztecs. Another Viking takes off the heads of five Aztecs with one mighty swing. It is like an army of panthers rushing at a family of powerful bears. The Vikings are strong, but there are simply too many Aztecs to count. Gunnar wants to fight in the forefront and die with honor, but Hadwin pulls him to the Great Hall.
"We'll make our stand there," he yells in your ear.
The hall is full of all who can't fight. There are children and the elderly. They huddle together and scream in fear as you enter, not knowing if you're friend or foe.
"Help me,"
Hadwin says, and runs to the smoldering ashes of the hearth. He kicks the hard dirt to reveal a corner of a stone. Gunnar does the same at the other edge, and a few other Vikings pitch in. Together, and with great effort, you lift a stone slab that's under the fire and place it to the side. There's a square hole with a ladder leading down into the darkness.
"Quick, everyone, get into the cellar," Hadwin says.
The elderly and sick and the children rush into the hole, no one wishing to be last. The Viking warriors press the crowd back to prevent them from falling and force them to enter one at a time.
The door bursts open and a group of Aztecs come howling in, axes raised.
The Vikings cut them down before they can get to the fleeing families and slam the door shut. When the last of the people are in the hole, the slab is replaced. The Viking warriors stand around the room, tense, expectant, waiting to fight, preparing to die. There are no windows in the Great Hall, the front door being the only entrance. It has been reinforced by furniture to keep it closed. The Vikings upturn benches and chairs in a semicircle around the door to form a makeshift wall. All are expectant, weighing their feet and clenching their weapons.
The wind pummels the Great Hall. The beams creak and groan. Another gust pushes the whole structure to one side. One of the beams collapses to the floor, crushing a Viking. Cracks form in the supporting pillars. There's a huge snapping sound, and one entire wall collapses, sending debris and beams from the room hurtling down. You instinctively leap onto a table just in time before the entire structure bends and crashes. Your table cracks, but only just remains stable enough to hold the great weight crushing down. Everything is dark in the small bubble of space under your table, but beyond, you can hear the wind. Powerful, mighty. Your mound shakes under its force. You can't hear a single human sound. The roar of the hurricane is so great. You hold onto the shattered table leg with white-knuckled fists. You hold and you wait. The hurricane passes. You can hear again. You can hear moans from the injured, muffled by the materials covering you. You scratch at the wood and reeds until your hands feel the air beyond, and a rush of fresh air sucks into the cavity. You press your head out. It's night. There are stars in the sky, and the moon is near full. There's still a light wind, but it seems tepid compared to what you just experienced. You expand the hole and pull yourself through. The town is gone. The wood and wattle and daub, the walls, the battlements, everything is gone, spread out and scattered across the island. Even the jungle swamp has been ravaged, with trees upturned and smashed.
and look down to the water. The longboats are gone. The Aztec army is gone. The only thing moving are the waves sparkling dreamily in the moonlight, as though nothing had happened. A painful moan nearby snaps you to attention. You jump out of the hole and follow the sound. You find an Aztec cut nearly in half by a fallen beam. His torso is crushed. His moans fade into a death gurgle as his eyes glaze over. There are more moans rising from the debris. "Hadwin! Gunnar!" you shout and start digging. You manage to uncover some Viking warriors. They're dazed and injured in a variety of ways. Those who aren't too badly injured all snap to attention when they remember their families buried in the cellar. Those that can help start to dig alongside you.
"Come on, put your backs into it," comes a familiar voice. It's Gunnar.
His face is cut and covered in mud, but he's alive. He grabs a corner of the headstone and heaves. The stone is tossed to the side. Below are the frightened faces of children and the elderly, illuminated by candles and the silvery glow of the moon. The Vikings help them climb from the hole.
"Where's Hadwin?" Gunnar says.
"I don't know. We haven't found him yet." Gunnar closes his eyes.
"I've known Hadwin since we were lads."
"We'll find him," you say as you struggle against a beam. Gunnar takes it in his hands and tosses it like a twig.
"This is all my fault," Gunnar says. "I brought this on us."
"I wouldn't be so hard on yourself," you say. "You were trying to do what you thought was best for your people. Wasn't you who led the army of Aztecs here?"
"True. That was Eric the bastard. May his headless soul roast in hell. But I should have listened to Hadwin. He was right about the coca plants. He's always right. I'm a fighter, not a leader."
"I think the two of you work well together, believe it or not."
"How do you mean?"
"Well, when it's time to build and grow, Hadwin leads well. When it's time to fight, you are the natural leader. If you two can somehow manage to share leadership a bit better and play to your strengths, I think you'll be successful. You just need to work together more instead of competing with each other over power."
"Loki bewitch me, you're a wise one. We'll make you a place yet at Muspel."
"If only I could stay."
"Right, your mission. When will you leave?"
"Soon. I'll help you rebuild first."
"We do thank you. You're always welcome at our hearth."
"It's Hadwin," a Viking says, lifting a beam. "Come, help!"
"Is he alive?" Gunnar says as he rushes over.
Yes, I think so."
You dig furiously to reveal the slender man from the debris. He's breathing in gasps.
"Hadwin, can you hear me?"
Gunnar says. He checks his body over.
"His armor saved him, but he's gonna feel that," he says, pointing at a dent in the breastplate.
Hadwin opens his eyes.
"Did we win?"
"Yes, we won. The Aztecs were completely destroyed."
Hadwin smiles and closes his eyes.
"Fruit,"
Gunnar says, leaning down to Hadwin as though to share a secret. Hadwin squints one eye open.
"What are you talking about, Gunnar?"
"Fruit. We'll grow an orchard of tropical fruit trees. Midgard will pay us in gold."
Hadwin smiles.
Süße Talta till Süster so. Kommst Cola wie nettes Jöstrando. Som denus dodo pa jüastrand. Hüt mit Sos döde din elze sin süster Raff.
That was part two of The Black Scourge. I said at the beginning of the show that I would give you a sample of an old Christmas show that I did for our patrons. This is a sample from Escape from Stalingrad, which is a dramatized first-hand account from a soldier who survived the cauldron. Have a listen.
Exhausted, I collapsed on my heap of snow and fell into a restless sleep. The cold soon woke me again. With chattering teeth, I looked around me. A Luftwaffe inspector came across the square. I shouted to him and asked what were the chances of getting a flight out. He replied that 3 hours ago they had radioed that a number of aircraft had taken off. They would drop supplies. Whether or not they would land was uncertain. I showed him my authority to be airlifted. With a shake of the head, he said it was invalid. It needed the signature of the Surgeon General. "Go and talk to him," he said. "It's only 500 meters over there in the gully." Only 500 meters. Once more, this great effort. Every movement meant more pain. The mere thought of it made me weak, and I sank back into my half-dozing condition. Suddenly, I saw my home, my wife and daughter, and bent over them the distorted faces of fallen comrades. Then a Russian ran up to me, raised the stock of his rifle, and struck me. Filled with pain, I arose. The Russian was a medical orderly who had kicked my wounded leg. There were three of them and a stretcher. They probably had the job of getting the dead away from the airstrip. He had wanted to check if I was still alive. Not surprising, for my shrunken, bloodless face must have looked more like that of a corpse than a living man. The short sleep had given me a little more strength. I got them to describe to me the way to the medical bunker, intending to make it there. I dragged myself forward with the last of my strength. An eternity it seemed to take before I was sitting in the presence of the Surgeon General. I reported the incident to him and obtained his signature. "That ox could have spared you the walk," he said as he signed. "The army signature is enough." Afterwards, he sent me into the neighboring bunker. The medical orderly wanted to change my dressing, but I declined. A feeling of prickly disquiet drove me from the warm bunker. After strenuously scrambling out of the gully, I regained the airfield. I looked for the inspector and found him still close by my heap of snow. "Now, my papers were in order," he said. I chose the path of discretion and refrained from calling him an ox. Perhaps it saved my life. During our conversation, the motors of several aircraft were heard droning towards the airfield. Were they Russians or our saviors? All heads searched the heavens. All we could see was shadowy movements in the light cloud cover. From below, flares were fired up. Then they came down like giant birds of prey. They were German HE-111s, shedding altitude in great circles. Would they drop bomb casings of provisions? Would they land to take a small number of these poor, shot-up men? The blood raced in the arteries, and despite the cold, one felt hot. I opened the threadbare collar of my greatcoat so as to look up better. All the efforts and sufferings of the last days, weeks, and months were forgotten. Up there was salvation, the last chance of going home.
That was a sample from Escape from Stalingrad. If you want to hear the rest of the story, come on over to Patreon and sign up to support the show. You'll find tons of other shows just like this one, plus old shows that were taken down, bonus episodes, a prequel that lays out the story of the Twilight Histories, an ongoing role-playing game that takes place in a magical realm. Plus, you get early access to shows before they go live. I've got 3 mini-shows we just put up this month. What if Russia never sold Alaska? What if the U.S. conquered Mexico? And there's another fun one where Atlantis rose during the Middle Ages and let loose hordes of nightmarish creatures. The important thing is that when you sign up, you support the growth of the Twilight Histories. We pay our podcasters for their hard work. Let me tell you, it is hard work. These stories are all-consuming. They take over your life for a while. I know when I'm building a story, my brain will turn into a circuit board that's smoking. I'll be plotting while I'm walking the dog, taking a shower. Sometimes my mind will be buzzing late into the night, long after everyone else is asleep. I know how much work goes into these stories, so we make sure that our podcasters are well compensated. It's only fair. And I'm using whatever extra budget we have to build out a role-playing game. That's going to be our big push for 2021. And you can be a part of that by joining our Discord community. We're trying to get some games going to beta test the idea, and we need players and game masters. No experience necessary, just come with an imagination. Visit twilighthistories.com for more details. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Till next time, take care.